Hello, hello. How are you guys?
Doing well, sir. How are you?
Good. Staying busy. It's rushing back pretty quickly across the country, and everybody's kind of rushing to figure out what to do with all these tickets they're starting to get.
Exactly. So how are corporate entities and how are teams handling, okay, I can do 50% now, maybe 75% later, then maybe 100%. How are they going about their business to make that work within the configurations of either their arena or ballpark?
It is so fascinating, just event by event. Some companies are trying to opt out of their inventory. Other companies are trying to get as much inventory as they possibly can and taking the opt-out inventory from other companies. And the individual fans are buying up all the expensive stuff that corporations usually buy. I mean, I was talking to one of the providers for one of the major events, because, you know, they have those consolidator groups, and they do Kentucky Derby, they do, you know, events like that. And they were saying that they've done more revenue already for next year than they did the year prior, and the corporates haven't bought yet. It's all just twos and fours. It's just people who have been stuck at home that want to go out and do it. And so it's just, it's really fascinating because we kind of get a good look at it before anybody else does, because we see the company start to load their inventory, and the amount of inventory they're loading shows that it's back. I mean, inventory for next month in baseball and, you know, late summer, it looks like everybody's anticipating being full force. So it's the water spigot has been turned back on. There's a lot of companies out there that are trying to use a teacup to catch a fire hydrant.
Lucas Oil Stadium being utilized for the Final Four this year. It was supposed to anyway. Next year, it's the Mercedes-Benz Dome in New Orleans. I'm going to assume that tickets are starting to fly on that thing now, right?
It's going to be absolutely massive. It's a shame this year. Lucas Oil is one of the best stadiums for the Final Four. Indianapolis is a great town. My Trojans got smashed last night. They were not prepared for that. But
that's okay. They played a machine.
They did. My goodness, that was a clinic. But they are already in a position where they're trying to figure out how to balance the demand that's going to come from the regular consumer with the regular demand that comes from the corporate sponsors, because a lot of those sponsors didn't get to activate this year. So if you're Capital One, or if you're AT&T, or if you're Verizon, or if you're any of those large companies that get around that event, you didn't get to do anything around it this year. So now you're planning on next year being a special occasion. Because think about it this way. What the companies do a really great job of is they make it possible. Most people think when a company is taking out a customer, it's because it's some bigwig taking out a bigwig, and that does happen. But the vast majority of it is companies giving people access to something they can't get otherwise, right? It's sold out or they couldn't get it. Well, now you have five times the demand from the general public, and the companies still have their inventory. So they're trying to figure out, these events are trying to figure out how to balance this. Because it used to be that, you know, the companies would buy 20 to 30% of the inventory, which would cover 60% of the revenue, and then the general fan would cover the rest. But now the general fan demand is so high, you have to try to find that balance. It's quite fascinating.
The Masters, of course, is coming up. And the Masters, they don't release anything. And you know, I mean, they don't release the size of the crowd. They don't release the TV deal with CBS. I mean, which is fine. That's their prerogative. They're a private club, and that they can do that. But the PGA Championship will be in May, but that's in South Carolina, and then the U.S. Open is in La Jolla.
Yeah.
So what is South Carolina? You and I both know is wide open.
Yep.
What kind of restrictions could the U.S. Open face in June in suburban San Diego?
Well, what people around the country may not understand, and that's fair because they may not travel there, is California is a very, and we won't talk politics, we'll just talk about how they are, because it's the question
exactly
that we're asking, right?
Yep.
California is seen as a very, very blue state, and it votes that way. But what people don't understand is San Diego is a very red county in a very blue state. Very predominantly military, Republican congressmen, Republican municipal government, right? So it is a really interesting battle happening between the city of San Diego, the county of San Diego, and the state of California, because the state of California's government is very blue. And this comes in the question of economic prosperity. So we spoke with the PGA about this yesterday. and they don't know. We spoke with one of the largest restaurant owners in San Diego County, which owns 28 restaurants, many of which are in the La Jolla area. They have received zero guidance. Steve, they don't know. They don't know what to do. So San Diego County is anticipated to be in the orange this week, in the orange tier, which means 50% capacity for most things, 100% for grocery stores, et cetera, et cetera. So it would seem like it's going to be open, but we have no idea.
Right. The NFL releases officially what it's doing with its TV deals. Not much has changed except Thursday night. ESPN gets a little more leeway. Mm-hmm. Let's start with this. Inventory-wise, what can the 17th game mean for the leagues? What does it mean for the fan?
It creates more opportunity for fans to attend a game. And what the NFL is trying to do is get international on top of adding an additional game. So when they add this game, what they're trying to do is assign international rights to teams and then eventually have those teams play a game in those markets. So that's where we're eventually going with this. And there's natural fits, right? The Dallas Cowboys are going to be in Mexico. And, you know, you've already had the Jaguars and the New York Giants playing in Europe. The question is, how does this mature over the next couple of years? Because that's really the thought behind that 17th game, is let's use this game as an opportunity for us to grow the pie in the international market, where the NFL's been very strong, but they're getting their teeth kicked in by soccer in too many regions that will be valuable as those regions become more wired and more connected. And so it means in the short term there will be more revenue for the teams that are hosting the additional game. That all makes sense. But more importantly, it gives them the leeway to start to create the international following that they see the mega clubs have. Because you and I talk about this a lot because you're very well educated on this, and sometimes a casual fan isn't. If you actually pull up the value of the top 10 franchises in the world, yep, soccer is dominant. Mm-hmm. The NFL, there's a couple baseball teams, but they're looking at what Real Madrid's doing internationally. They're looking at what Manchester United's doing internationally. They're looking at what those clubs are doing internationally, right?
Bayern Munich.
Yeah, and what they're doing internationally, and the NFL's saying, we don't play any international games. Manchester United comes on tour to the United States every summer, right? Bayern Munich plays in China regularly. AC Milan travels. Juventus travels. The NFL doesn't do that. So they're trying to create that scenario by adding this game and creating more revenue opportunities so that they can share it with the players and bring up kind of that bottom-level player so that they can add roster spots and pay more money.
Yes, what's underneath the layer of this is I don't think people realize that in the initial year or two of this, the NFL will be playing four games internationally.
Yep.
And that's in this contract that I think a lot of people do not realize. So now the next part, Thursday Night Football, nobody really wanted, but Amazon wants it.
Oh, yeah.
What's your thought on, now I know some people have cut the cord, we know that. What's your thought on this deal and what it could mean to the future of what the NFL wants to do with it and also other leagues copycatting?
Right. I think the way the NFL looks at it, you know, their TV deal is still incredibly lucrative. They still dominate. I mean, you look at the top 20 rated events every week, the NFL is 11 of them. Right? I mean, even crummy games are doing better than most people's favorite television show. I mean, every now and then you get a Two and a Half Men or a, you know, one of those shows. Everybody Loves Raymond at the end where they get massive ratings.
NCIS.
And those shows get crushed by Sunday Night Football. It's not even close.
Right? NCIS, you know, right.
Yeah, it's not even close. I mean, it's 2-1 in most cases. So what they're looking at is trying to better understand the streaming audience and then better measure and monetize that streaming audience. Because, yes, streaming makes it more difficult to have the more traditional ratings numbers that we use, which are the Nielsen ratings. But streaming also makes it a lot easier for us to, because now once we move to streaming, we can use the browser and we can use what we know about the person to personalize opportunities to them, not just for sponsorships, but for gaming. Right, so though streaming is going to be this massive change from the network model, which is ad-based and ad-driven, and they're trying to work some of the betting into that. When you move to streaming and you kind of consolidate the two, we were eventually going to get to that place. Now you can personalize the experience for everybody watching, where the ads you're being shown are tied to the NFL, but they also are taking into account your personal browser history and your gambling history. Who do you bet on? What do you bet, and how?
And this is, and by the way, if you have Amazon Prime, which everybody in the station does, because they just, you know, the guy in the corner office is on it all the time. We want him selling more, but that's a different story. If you have Amazon Prime to buy, you have Amazon Prime in your TV. I don't think people realize that.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's the whole idea, is this subscription model platform that has access to your personal information. Look, what Amazon and Apple and Google did, which is genius, and it's something that we talk about a lot here and people don't realize it, is they made a trade of convenience for data, and nobody realized it. Like, if I came to you in 2006 and I put the iPhone, which came out a year later, in front of you, your first response would have been, what is that? I don't know how to use it. But your second response if I told you, Steve, what I'm going to do with this device is I'm going to track everybody you call, wherever you go, what you buy, how you browse, and when. And then I'm going to use that information and weaponize it to sell you more stuff. You would call the police on me. But what Apple, Google, and Amazon, and Facebook have all done so successfully, and now, you know, the new layer of that with Snapchat and et cetera, is they've made something so convenient for you that you don't realize what the trade-off is. And what Prime's done so well is they've said, listen, here's a high level of convenience, a little bit of a discount, you get your stuff faster, this is all wonderful. Meanwhile, we're just collecting everything you buy. We know more about you than anybody. And now when we, you know, pay for something that you're more interested with the NFL, it gives us more ability to sell your information to merchandisers, put things in front of you, and eventually get you gaming as well. That's what this is all about. So it's a genius move that they've been, it's a genius playbook that they've been exercising for the last 17 years. And that's what Amazon's doing here. It's really transparent and smart.
Yeah, I got a note from Amazon. We said, we've been tracking your habits. You're cheap.
Don't want to sell this guy anything. Yeah, he gets the penny slot bet.
You've referenced a couple times in there the gambling part of it. And to me, with some of the tweets we've seen to college basketball players, are there ignorant people where race comes into play? Yes, but I think you always have to ask the question, did you gamble money on the game? What is gambling going to mean, not just in that regard, what is gambling going to mean as an advertising outlet for networks, for stadiums, for arenas, for ballparks? What can that mean in their revenue stream?
It's they've been planning for this for a long time, right? And it's one of the most integrated marketplaces that you could bring in. Europe has had it this way for a while. For the listeners who haven't gone to an event out there, if you go to an English Premier League match in London, you can walk up at halftime and literally place a bet at a book that's in the stadium. I mean, it's integrated into your experience. You can walk down the street and place a bet. It's just everything that you're doing. And so that's been a normal part of society there. And the digitalization of this, being able to take this online and personalize it so I know how you like to bet and where you like to bet, just makes this more interactive. And eventually what this turns into is, how do we create an environment that brings more fans in so we can sell them more stuff and so that we can get them to game more? And the ticketing aspect of it eventually just goes away. I mean, right now, they really like the idea of you having to pay a small amount of money to get into a casino, right? But in general, if you're playing enough, if you're spending enough, you don't have to pay to stay in the casino, right? I'm not at that level yet, but we know people who are.
And yes, we do.
That's the way this is going to become with sports. It's going to be, okay, you can buy the season ticket, but once you've gamed to a certain point, your season ticket's on us. Once you've experience this enough, like, we're going to have people that are going to securitize, and they're going to, you know, basically supplement your attendance at the event, because it drives more business for me. Please don't charge Steve $180 to go to the game, because I need him there, because he'll spend $600 on my fantasy drafts or on my fantasy gaming site. So it's really interesting how this is all changing. For those who didn't see it, today, Fox Sports, they're no longer the Fox Sports Regional Sports Networks. They changed the name. It's Bally's now.
Yep.
The Bally Sports Networks. This is the future. It's here. And it's been coming for a long time.
It absolutely has. There will be kiosks inside of stadiums and arenas on the pro level.
Oh, yeah.
In every place you go. Now, the college level, I'm not so sure they want to go there with that. But on the pro level, that's what we're going to see, where you can go up and say, you know what, I'm going to make a prop bet at halftime.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what they want. They want you to be a part of it. And what's really fascinating about this is the conversation that happened in the Supreme Court about college sports today.
Yes.
Because the questions that were being asked by Sotomayor were very similar to the questions that were being asked that led to Major League Baseball's antitrust exemption, you know, forever ago.
Yep.
So how, I mean, even Thomas, who barely ever asked any questions, was very active. So we don't know what that looks like with NIL. We don't know what that looks like with, you know, Oliver Luck, who's been thrown out there as the possible next Pac-12 commissioner. He's on the board of a company that sells NIL rights consulting into colleges.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what you said is like, we don't know what that means or if it's applicable. We have no idea what college sports are going to look like in 5 years right now. This is the time in our history that I think more is changing than even the conference realignment of 15 years ago.
I agree with you. And finally on this front, and it's baseball, to me, the NFL got quick cash to get himself back on track post-pandemic with the TV deals. And
yep.
And look, their labor agreement, which passed 1019 to 959 a year ago, which barely passed, opened the door for this to happen now. Hockey's already expanded. Vegas, Seattle, they've done it. To me, the quick cash is the NBA expanding by two in a couple of years, and baseball's expanding by two in a couple of years. But baseball can't do it until they get the collective bargaining agreement going.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Tony, I mean, you know,
it's not going to happen anytime soon either. The biggest problem is they're looking at football and the revenue share that happens there. They're looking at basketball and the revenue share that's happening there.
Yep.
And it's just... The chasm to cross to bring Major League Baseball's economics anywhere near what you see in the NFL and the NBA is just too broad. It's just never going to happen.
That's right.
So I have no idea how they're going to solve the problem. It's way above my pay grade, but I think people don't realize that we've said in the past, you know, there's probably going to be a strike or a lockout, and I know 94 happened. This is as bad as 94. If not, worse.
It's Rob Manfred's pay grade, and he doesn't know.
No.
All right.
And I know the casual fan probably doesn't realize that a third of minor league baseball teams got wiped out last year.
Oh,
not by
man.
COVID. Baseball wiped them out.
Yep. Well, baseball did it to them. COVID didn't do it to them. Baseball did.
And I think they just had perfect timing with COVID showing up that people don't realize that a lot of those teams that you've heard of, they're not there anymore.
They went from 160 to 160 to 120. And that was their plan, 160 to 120.
Crazy. It's crazy. COVID. But it all is driven by the dollar, right? You see what Endeavor filed for their IPO today, right? It's all of these things are this consolidation of, you know, they're looking at where they think this is going to go, and they're trying to place their bet on that. And Major League Baseball is terrified that they don't have the young fan right now, that the young fan who likes to day trade, the young fan who likes to game, the young fan who believes in legalized marijuana, booze at the games, if our college sports, all of that stuff, that has to be part of the experience for them or they're going to leave. And you and I are old enough that we remember the first time when booze was allowed at sporting events for the NCAA. Right?
I was in college.
You could drink beer at the USC games.
Yeah.
And then they banned it, and now it's coming back. So all of these things, just going to be really interesting to see how fast they change because, like we've talked about, I don't know if Major League Baseball can win back that young fan right now. The only thing they have going for them is participation is up amongst the young fans. But soccer's been saying that for years, and I think soccer might have already taken it.
Right. We'll talk again in a month because this is a blast. Thank you so much, sir.
Oh, anytime. I love talking to you guys. Hopefully, I want to get out there. You guys are going to Wisconsin. That's your first road game, right?
Yep, September 4th. September 4th.
The whiskey.
Yep, September 4th at Whiskey. Let me know if you're going to be there, because we'll have a good time.
Yeah, I want to be somewhere. I'm climbing the walls. I usually go to a lot of fun events, and we haven't been to any in a while, so we'll see.
White out again this year is probably going to be Michigan. Michigan here this year. So, all right.
In Michigan at home, it's too bad you guys didn't get Ohio State last year.
By the way, Auburn is here this year.
I know, and then you guys are going to Auburn, which is going to be
a year
really
later,
fantastic. One of the greatest fan regrets I have is not going to Auburn when we did the home-and-home with them at SC. And I didn't go, and I really wish I had. I just didn't think we were going to be that good, and Matt Leinart turned out to be great. So
I just think that you ought to start thinking ahead on a trip down there. Because I know somebody would like to have you down there. That'd be me.
Oh, man. Yeah, it'd be super fun.
Tony, thank you.
All right, brother. We'll talk soon.